Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. Yeah, we're going to pick straight up where we left off yesterday with listeners' stories about not being able to get a mortgage or afford to rent in middle age, single and working and earning reasonably good money, and the fear of what the future holds, particularly in retirement age. Paul, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very good. You're 41, but you feel you're running out of time. Explain what you mean by that.
It's just the term of the mortgage. I'm not quite sure just how long I'll have up until what age I can actually take out a mortgage over. That's probably the first issue. The second issue is I've been renting for over 18 years now. And my latest rent, I had to move house there some time ago. And my latest rent now is, I'm not going to give exact figures, but it's over $1,400 a month.
And are you single?
No, I'm married with 3 kids.
And you'd like to be able to buy your own home, is what you're saying?
I'd love to be able to buy my own home. I was even looking at the Rebuilding Ireland home loan scheme, but again, like, I'm trapped with a 10% deposit that I can't possibly... Well, I can put like away a small amount of money a week or a month, but, I mean, I'm going to be another seven or eight years trying to get that money, that 10% together.
Yeah, and 10% of what? What would you need, do you think? What sort of a budget do you think you need?
Based on my wages as they are now, I could borrow $200,000 off the Rebuilding Ireland home loan scheme. Mm-hmm. So that would mean that if I save $20,000 or if I got $20,000 from somewhere, I would be able to buy a house around $220,000, which would be kind of modest enough, but I'd be able to buy a reasonable house in Carlow for that.
Yeah. And over the 18 years, would you have a rough idea of how much you've spent on rent?
I done a rough calculation there last night before I came on, and I think I would be 2/3 of the way into a mortgage by now.
Right. Well into six figures is what you're saying, obviously.
I would, yeah. Oh, but definitely it'd be well into six figures.
Yeah. And how does it affect you, this worry or concern?
Well, let's say like a couple of months ago, the last place we were living in, the landlord came to us and said he was selling that, you know, because of the tax he had to pay on the property, it just wasn't worth his while keeping on the building, and he would have to sell, basically to have to sell, like, yeah. So I can't think of the word now, there's no security in private rental property. Like, we got that call, he came to the door, and that was it. Like, we knew we had to move, and we had to find somewhere within 3 months, and we did. Mm-hmm. I consider myself in a lucky position because I'm in a good job, and I was able to move, you know. And there's a cost associated with moving, so it knocked into whatever savings we had. And, you know, that cost is after kind of setting me back again. And because the rent is after kind of going up for us, it kind of sets us back in another few years because we're not able to save as much.
Yeah. And the central bank rules obviously stipulate you must have 10%. There's no more 100% mortgages.
That's right.
It's a double-edged sword, really, because that was the problem, wasn't it, back in the noughties, that you could get money, no problem, from the bank, and people got into negative equity, and obviously we had the crash and rules changed. So on the one hand, you can see the point of it, but on the other hand, it's leaving you in a situation where you can't actually save that money to buy your own home.
You see, I just don't understand. I'm not a financial expert or anything like that, but I don't understand how they cannot do a risk assessment based off of people who are able to pay high rents over a long period of time. A rent that is effectively higher than a mortgage would be. It's actually a couple of hundred euro higher than what a mortgage would be for me a month. And how they're not able to look at that. look at a person's ability. Like, I went back to college when I got let go back in 2009 of a job. I was in a trade job, which is a pretty good job, you know. And I went back into college, and now I'm working in the science industry and pharma in a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. And I'm on pretty good wages. And I can't understand how they can't risk assess people, you know, in lieu of the 10% deposit.
Yeah. We had this conversation yesterday as well with one of our callers who has been paying rent for 20 to 30, maybe over 25 years, never yeah. missed a payment. And that counts for nothing going into the bank looking for a loan.
No, it counts for absolutely not.
And you probably are paying more rent than you would actually if you were repaying a mortgage.
Yeah, we were looking at the mortgage compared to the payment repayments on a mortgage compared to, let's say, the rent. And we would have an excess of about 450 left over a month.
And you're saying that every day you're waiting for a knock on the door, maybe, or a phone call from the landlord to say, look, I'm selling up, I'm getting out.
Yeah. Now, I think because we're just after moving into this property, I'm hoping it's going to last for a good few years. But again, there's no guarantee, there's no security, like, you know. I know that if I was paying a mortgage and I lost my job in the morning, it would be up to me. You know, the onus is on me to go out and find another job, you know, that sort mm-hmm. of way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's not just down to me whether I'm going to be staying here a long period of time, like, you know, that sort of way, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's up to somebody else.
And you've three young children.
Yeah.
And it that makes it more difficult because obviously if you're in a situation where you've young kids going to school,
yeah.
if you have to move, you're only going to be able to move somewhere relatively close unless you want to take
That's
the kids
right.
out of school and uproot them or whatever. And that's another stress, isn't it?
Yeah, because of the way things have worked out, we have decided to homeschool our middle child because of the school he was in. We're going to try and see out the last year for my eldest girl, and the little fella's going to a school that he's able to get transport to.
Is it difficult to shield them from this uncertainty?
It is when we try to look at it as a positive thing. So we said to them, like, look, we're going to move, and we're going to move to a bigger house, and you're each going to have a room of your own. And we made it a positive thing, you know, that sort of way, like, you know. But I suppose in the background for us is the stress around it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, you know, and I can't guarantee my kids that we won't be moving again. So I can't, you know. Like, there's so many dynamics to it, like, you know, that sort of way, like, you know. But I'm just kind of... And I seen that the government lately announced like a housing for all of Ireland thing, but like it was an initiative or something that where they had a number of different things. But I'm just wondering how much will they follow through on, like, you know, that sort of way, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's other stuff then that kind of it does frustrate me, like, you know, you used to be able to claim back tax on the rent that you paid every year. But they'd done away with that a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they did. And that actually kind of, it kind of makes me angry a little bit. Like, you know, I can't even get that money back, you know, towards...
If there were rules, yeah, if you knew, Peter, that you, or if you knew, Paul, that you were, although you were renting this house, but if you knew, if you were guaranteed that you would never be evicted or that that house was going to be yours, you know, until old age... Would you be happy with that, or do you still like the idea of buying and having your own home, a place that you can call home and that your children can call home?
I do like the idea of being able to own my own home, and that, you know, also, you know, like, would it be different if the rents were closer to a mortgage? It might be.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's a travesty in this country that rents are above the price of a mortgage of a house.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's absolutely disgraceful because at the end of it, you're getting nothing. You know, at the end of, like, you can't hand over the house to anybody. So you can't, even though you've been paying what is basically a mortgage or more.
Well, I'll ask you that question again in another way as well. Like, your children Can they call it home? Can they put posters up? You know, can you decorate the house to your liking? Does it feel like your own home?
Well, this is the other thing. We have moved a number of times, like, you know. We now know what we can and can't do in a house, like, you know, that sort of way, like, you know. So you can't decorate it the way you want it, like, you know, that sort of way, like, you know. If you have to do a change, you always have to ring somebody, you know, whether it's the landlord or the letting agent, and ask them, can you do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So fixing washing machines or getting the lawn mowed and all of that sort of thing, you in some cases, you probably have to get permission to do all that, or can you do a lot of that stuff yourself?
No. The one plus of renting is, you know, like, you can call if an appliance has failed or if something has broken down, like, you know, that sort of way. In regards to kind of things like cut the grass, act like you look after that yourself, that's normal, like, you know,
sure,
that sort of
sure.
way. Like,
no,
you know?
That's it. Like, there are things that you can do in rental property that, or you can't do, I suppose, with a rental property that the rest of us that own our own homes can actually do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Stay there with me, please, Paul. I want to bring Peter in here. 51551. Peter, good afternoon to you. You say in your text to us you feel the future is bleak. Why do you feel like that from your own perspective?
Hi, Damien. I think that from my perspective, like Paul there, I was working in construction, not a very highly paid job, and then the recession came and it just absolutely caused the whole construction industry, which is, you know, and there was a lot of kind of, there wasn't a lot of kind of defense of construction-based people. There was no, we were just all told, don't come into work on Monday. And we've gone from a situation where we had ghost estates and overabundance of housing to a housing crisis in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of something that people aren't talking about, as far as I can see anyway. From my perspective, I had to do a lot of soul-searching background 10 years ago-ish. And that led me, like Paul as well, to retrain, restudy. I did a four-year degree part-time. And it just didn't have the desired effect for me. So my game plan, say 10-ish years ago, was to move towards owning a place of my own, not just through kind of materialistic ownership of an asset. It's just because, in my case, I kind of have particular interests, and that just kind of mean that a country place with a shed or some type of property would be more conducive to the way that I wish to live my life,
mm-hmm.
which I think is important if, like me, you're single. You have to kind of define what your life is going to be about. And I kind of feel that I kind of felt when I started the course around 2013, 2014, that I was going to be moving towards a goal, something worthwhile, something tough, but worth pursuing. And all that's happened in here since is that the goal has just moved further and further and further away. And now it's infinitely harder to achieve. So I kind of regard myself as being kind of, you know, a very kind of resilient person, and I think just over the last few years I've just learned to fear the future, because, you know, especially the other side of it as well, in my case, is the world of work was very unkind to me as well. Even at the moment, my supervisor, my manager think very highly of me, and but nevertheless HR unexpectedly have come along in my case and bust half the team back. They've actually demoted half of us because of the our status here as one temporary staff and two on a temporary assignment.
And just to come back
so
to your
I'm
own
facing
your...
a demotion and a pay cut.
Okay.
Even right now.
But and just coming back to something you mentioned there, and this cropped up quite a lot yesterday. You're turning 40 in November, so you're single. Do you feel as a single person that when it comes to renting property, you're discriminated against in that a room is a room, regardless of whether you're single or sharing with a partner? It's going to be €1,400 and you can only afford 700. As a single person, do you feel that you're at a disadvantage there? Oh, we seem to have lost Peter, have we? Okay, the lines have gone down. Okay, 51551. We'll try and get Peter back on the line there. You can email joe@rt.ie. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, Peter, you're back.
Indeed, yeah.
Sorry, the line went there. I was just making the point that a trend through yesterday's programme was how single people in the 40s and 50s, people like you, felt somewhat discriminated against when it comes to renting because, you know, a rumour a house is going to be the same price whether it's you're single or whether you have a partner or not.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it was very well put yesterday. You know, that one-bedroom apartments are priced as if they're intended for a couple with two incomes. You know, in my case, you know, I'm 40 and look, I'm very lucky that I have a very good housemate. But I mean, if we ever parted ways, mm-hmm. where do I go? Who do I share with? Under what circumstances?
Is that a constant worry for you, Peter?
It is, yes, absolutely. Like the other part of my text yesterday referred to the fact that we have effectively a hostile landlord who has increased the rent by 50% over the course of 3 years, and you know
Do you have a choice maybe to leave and go somewhere else where it's cheaper? Is that a problem?
Well, it's in my case. I have had search alerts set up on Daft for literally since January, and a small number of suitable places showed up. Just like from my perspective, I would just define it as like a country bungalow with a garage. That's all I'm looking for, and nothing of that nature pops up in anywhere near my area. Which it's important to remember when you are a single person. You know, I'm very lucky, as I said, at the moment with a good housemate. But I mean, I could move. You know, 50 km, 80 km away, and you know, and also, but it's the fact that, well, who is going to be your support network if you're going to be a single person? You know, I could take a single apartment, you know, 50-80 km away, but that takes me away not just from, you know, my friends, but also my family. You know, I mean, just the idea, the concept of the support network. You know, that there was a lady who was yesterday speaking about living in Kilkenny and commuting to Dublin and not having friends in Kilkenny. And that's a very real...
Yeah, you know, people will probably often ask the question, well, if you can't afford it in Dublin, move down the country. I think that's a very cold way of looking at it. You're entitled to, you know, a life as well, without having to pay the price of moving away to somewhere you just don't want to be in. You should have that choice. And people that might say, well, you know, go somewhere that you can afford and stop whinging. I mean, it is a callous kind of way. Do you get that a little bit from people?
Oh, I do. You know, I think that, like, it's like, I think that people often just don't recognise the lucky break that they got. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that I feel, you know, I don't feel like I've made many mistakes in my life. I felt as if the decisions that I made around my future, especially, you know, post-boom Ireland, you know, I think they were very sound and very sensible. It hasn't taken that much bad luck or, you know, to kind of put me in a very uncertain position. As I said, even around my job at the moment, you know, I what's the point of me choosing to move 50 or 80 km away? I don't know where I'm going to be working. It's very possible that I could get let go. Stable permanent jobs are hard to come by.
Yeah. And what about getting a mortgage? Have you looked about that or what have you been told?
I have looked. I've looked at all of the schemes, the Rebuilding Ireland schemes and so on. I didn't see anything in housing for all that spoke to me. Like all of the, in my case, being temporary, you know, it would be different if I had a partner with a permanent job, for example, that I would kind of supplement her application. But in my case, you know, I have a temporary job and unfortunately I was out of work for 6 months as well before I got this job. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take much to put you back on your knees again. And that's the way I feel I've been for several years. I felt as if, you know, the employment market is hostile, the housing market is hostile, and even, like, we can demonstrate how much more expensive houses are to buy or rent, and the terms around the schemes just stay static, you know. I think they should be more dynamic, and I think that they should, that, you know, it's very, there is a divide, I feel as if people who are stable, who are sorted, who had their lucky break, they kind of, I feel as if they look at me as if this is somehow my fault, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't take that to heart. I just have been waiting for my lucky day for about 10 years. It just hasn't come.
Why do you feel like that? What makes you feel like that?
It's, I think it's something that I noticed, especially when I was job hunting the last time. You know, people were kind of quick to insist some helpful advice, which you might have implemented months ago. It's like, you know, I am being proactive. I am doing everything, we'll say, air quotes, right, you know, to move forward towards something. But it's just, you know, I feel as if people want to find a reason why this will happen to me, but not them. Or me, but not, we'll say, their children, you know. But the point that I was trying to make is that everybody should be very concerned at the moment, because I have more in common with somebody at the age of 25, except I don't have the advantage of the extra 15 years. I feel that parents should be getting very upset on behalf of their children, because ultimately it's the parents that are going to have to dig them out. Mm-hmm. There is so many leg ups that people are given. As I said, that might be their lucky day. It's something might come across the chest. It's not. It's just, look, mm-hmm. you know, if your children in their 20s, if they're coming out of college, unless they're very focused, things are going to be very tough. Like, for example, at the hour of life that I'm at now, my parents were 3/4 of the way through a 20-year mortgage with 3 children going through school. Now, they weren't rich, but, you know, but now it's double income, 30 years for a mortgage. And I think that is just, like, why can't you see that it's not the same proposition to own a house, you know, in 2021 as it was back in 1981? It's not the same thing. And I think it's important that everybody gets upset, because it will affect everybody, is the way I feel.
Yeah, and like, if you got a 25-year mortgage tomorrow somehow, when you make your last payment, you'd be retiring that day or thereabouts.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, as regards, you know, my own circumstances, I mean, I guess I'm getting paid quite well compared to what I'm used to, because I've had some very poorly paid jobs over the last few years.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's coming through. This is not a situation where there are people that are down on their luck, they're, you know, on social welfare or on HAP or anything. The callers yesterday and yourself, you know, all well-paid jobs, you've done well for yourself, you've studied hard, you've worked hard, you've been honest, and still you're locked out of the housing market. And do I get an impression, Peter, listening to you as well, when you talk about the fact that, you know, you're single, and when the fact that you don't have a home, and the fact that some people say, well, it's your own fault. Is there a stigma attached to being 40-something on your own and not owning your own home? Is that what you're saying?
I think that, as a man, I think it's different. I don't personally, maybe people want to hold that stigma against me, but I don't see it that way. I feel as if, you know, all I want in terms of property, in terms of ownership, is just somewhere that I can be myself.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily bother me that I don't own a property, and I don't feel, talking to my single friends, and we are out there in numbers, and that's the surprising thing, that we're almost untouchables. You know, you don't talk about those guys because they're screwed. That's the kind of way I feel about it. You know, we can't do anything for them. That's the way I feel, so don't even talk about them.
Yeah, and you did talk there as well about, you know, people that do own their own homes, obviously very lucky, and those that, you know, are well able to pay their mortgage. But there are so many other people out there as well, you know, that are barely getting by, that are just one paycheck away from maybe missing a repayment as well. And, you know, they're nervous like you are about what the future
holds. No, it's incredibly. I mean, money stress is like, as I've had a lot of tough days over the last decade, and money stress is a very particular type of stress. In my case, I mean, on the other side, having heard Paul tell his story, you know, I actually was out of work, and I remembered vividly, I had €150 to my name in January of last year, and I've managed to save €10,000 in the intervening time on fairly ordinary wages, but it doesn't help. Even in that 18-month period, the goal has become harder to achieve.
Yeah. Stay with me there, Peter. Jenny is on the line, 51551. Jenny, good afternoon to you, and thanks for calling.
Hello.
So you turned 40 a few weeks ago, and you've just bought your first home, is that right?
I did, and I've been listening to everyone over the last couple of days, and it's like, my heart breaks for them, because it is ridiculously hard to find your own home in this country. And I, as I was saying to a researcher when they called me, I am relatively lucky in I have a decent, stable job. And I was able to work from home during the pandemic, and I was able to save money. But up until that point, I was renting for several years, and it was really, really hard to find a place. So I was renting a terrible flat at one point in Dublin, and then my landlord sold. And I couldn't find anywhere. I was going to viewings where there was 60 to 80 people ahead of me, and I was being outbid on rent. And I couldn't find anywhere. And I got lucky in that a friend of mine had an apartment that I was able to move into. And I basically got mate's rates on rent. And only that I knew someone, I wouldn't have had a home to live in. And then when I actually was able to save the money for a deposit, which only happened because of the last year being at home and not spending money on commuting and everything else, going through the mortgage process, the bank kept asking me if my family could lend me money or give me a gift. And my family are not wealthy. I'm a single person with a decent salary, and the bank still wanted extra funds from me. And it's like at every turn they kept asking, why can't they give you more money? Why can't they give you a gift? Surely there's someone can give you a gift. And it's like, no matter what you do, I'm an educated person with a decent job. And I kept being asked why my family couldn't give me a gift to support my mortgage application. And at one point, they were only going to lend me 85% of the mortgage, which would have meant I'd lose the apartment. And so, you know, even when you are in a relatively decent position employment-wise, you still come up against these barriers because you're a single person and you're not seen as a safe bet.
Very interesting. And what should be a joyous occasion of getting the keys to your own home and going through the process of getting the green light for a mortgage sounds to me like it was a stressful experience for you, Jenny.
I don't think I slept for about 4 months. Now that I'm here, I can appreciate the stress I felt at the time going through it. But when you're kind of trying to get to the end of the process, you kind of go into autopilot. But it's only when that stress is removed, you realise how much pressure you were under to get it over the line.
Your mortgage now, is it the same or less or more than what you were paying in rent?
It's €4 less than what I was paying in rent.
But at least now you know that the money is going towards a situation where, please God, you'll own the property before you retire. And surviving on the old age pension, maybe, you know,
exactly,
which is the case for a lot of people. Like, what happens when you reach 65 and you have to retire, or 66 or whatever it is, and you're suddenly with no savings, with no pension, because you couldn't afford to put money away for a private pension, and you couldn't afford to save money because you were paying rent for the previous 40-odd years, and suddenly you reach 65, 66, 67. It's a time bomb ready to go off, isn't it?
Exactly, and people are ignoring it. And even in my case, I went back to college as a mature student, so like I haven't been paying into a pension. You know, I only started paying into a pension in my job about 2 years ago, and that's my next stress now. Is like, what happens, like you say, when I get to retirement age? And it's like, you're always trying to catch up because you're trying to do, you get one thing done and there's another thing put in your way, and it's just housing. It shouldn't be so hard to have your own home in this country. You know, there's enough houses, there's enough apartments around there. But people, the wrong people have control of them, and too many people have the attitude of like, oh, everyone wants everything handed to them. It's not, it's a basic human right to have a roof over your head.
Which you're willing to pay for 100%, as you say. You're not looking for any handouts.
Everyone is. I have a fight with anyone who says that people expect things to be handed to them. No one's looking for handouts here. No one who you've been talking to over the last 2 days has been looking for handouts.
That's true.
Just don't want it to be so hard.
Yeah. Well, best of luck in your new home anyway, Jenny. There's probably a sense of relief there as well. And thanks very much for contacting us on the programme today. Peter, thanks a million as well. And to Paul earlier, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yeah, it's Damien here for Joe for a couple of days now. 51551 is the text. We're just going to move away from the housing for a moment. I want to talk to Father Richard Gagan, who emailed us. Father Richard, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Damien, and good afternoon to your listeners.
And how did you get on in Medjugorje last week?
I got on great, yeah. Lovely, and the weather was fantastic.
Yeah, it's so what part of old Yugoslavia is Medjugorje?
It's in Bosnia Herzegovina.
Okay, and had you been there before?
Oh God, many times, yeah.
And does Medjugorje, is it different to Lourdes in many ways?
It is very, very different. Yeah, different in every way, really. It was a very poor region, very small little village.
Yeah.
Now it has, of course, grown in size, but you're still out in a very rural area.
Yeah.
You know, so you're very in touch with nature.
And what do you like about going on pilgrimages?
I like the different people that I meet, and I also like that downtime for myself as well, where I can just go off and sit in a rock somewhere up. I know I could do it in Ireland or whatever, but it's just such a stunning place, such a beautiful setting.
Yeah.
And the people there are just out of this world as well.
When you go on these pilgrimages, do you go as part of a group? Do you go on your own? Do you meet people?
No, I've never gone on my own. I always go as part of a group. And it's the same group that I've been going with since, 20 years or more.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
And would you go once a year or...?
Mostly once a year, but I've often gone twice a year.
All right, very good.
Yeah.
And is it hard to get to Medjugorje?
Well, it's a 3-hour flight. You can fly to Split or Dubrovnik, and then it's a 3-hour coach journey after that then.
Yeah. But anyway, you contacted us because on your latest visit there last week, or you met people.
I did. I met three lovely people, and we went for a drink one evening on, I think, the first full day, and I had been sitting beside one of the ladies on the flight. And we just met, and they said, would you like to meet us later for a drink? And I said, yes. So we went to Victor's. Everyone that goes to Medjugorje will know Victor's.
Yeah.
So I met them there, and we had a lovely chat. And we never exchanged addresses or phone numbers or anything. So our paths didn't really cross for the rest of the week. And I met one of them then at the airport on the way back. And, of course, I was at the front of the queue at check-in, and they were at the back of the queue. So by the time they got checked in, I would imagine they hadn't time. I didn't even see him on the aircraft, but one of them came to me then in the baggage hall when I got back to Dublin, and gave me a beautiful card. And in the card, there was no phone number or address, and they've been on my mind, and I'd love to touch base with them again.
Well, what are their names? What do you know of the...
Now, the three names, there's a couple, Martin and Jackie.
Martin and Jackie.
I think they live somewhere around Raheny.
Okay.
On the north side of Dublin. And then Jackie's sister, Mary... lives in the parish of Kinsealy, and I know she's quite involved with her parish there.
Yeah, and you'd like to reunite with them.
I would. I'd love to reconnect with them. Yeah.
I'm not being smart, Father Richard, but do you think that maybe there was a reason they didn't put a contact number on?
No, actually, I don't. I don't.
You did hit it off with them.
I think they thought they'd get to chat with me at the airport in Dubrovnik.
Okay.
And then it just didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah.
When I got to Dublin, then I was rushing for a bus.
Right.
So, and
but
they had spoken to me.
You know,
they had said to me out there when we met that they'd love to meet up again, and they'd love, you know, for me to visit them and all that kind of stuff. You know, so very, very nice people.
Yeah,
and I'd love if your listeners could track them down for
me.
Okay,
so Mary and Jackie are sisters, and Jackie's husband was Martin, and they were part of a group were in Medjugorje last week.
We flew out on the 8th of September and we came back last Wednesday, the 15th of September.
Yeah.
So we're home just over a week.
And, And when you go there, Father Richard, do you pray? Do you chant? Do you go to Mass? Or what's involved in the...
Well, Mass would be the centre point, yeah. Mass would be, yeah.
Yeah.
There's 10 o'clock Mass every morning for the English-speaking pilgrims.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go to the Blue Cross, where Our Lady, there was an apparition there. Then there's the Cross Mountain. There are various sites. There isn't Christ. Various sites around the grounds of the church, if you like. And then we go on little trips. We might go out to a church, and the people want to venerate the Divine Mercy. There's a relic of Blessed Faustina, Saint Faustina there now, and Pope John Paul II. And, of course, they were both Polish. So John Paul II really pushed for her canonization.
Right.
So that's Divine Mercy. And then there's another place we go then, and we venerate the relics of St. Anthony.
All right.
So, yeah, that's nice little... the week is all sort of mapped out. You can do as much or as little as you want.
Yeah. And are pilgrimages, are they as popular as they were 20, 30 years ago when you started going?
I think they are.
Really,
I think they are, actually, yeah. Of course, with COVID, Medjugorje more or less closed down. And it's only now that they're feeling that the group is coming back again in their numbers, but not as much. There were Americans there and Germans there during the week I was there. But now it's coming to the end of the season towards October.
Right.
But I'd imagine they'll be back to normal, I would imagine, next year.
What about Irish people, though? Have you noticed?
Oh, the Irish are absolutely the best. They are strong in numbers, yeah.
And is that still the case? Despite the fact, I suppose, our relationship with the church has changed in that 30 or 40 years, there's less people going to Mass and so on.
And
we've had all the scandals in between. But even so, there is a devotion there, a core.
Oh, there is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good.
People that might never go to Mass will go to Medjugorje.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
A mix of ages and...
Yeah, all ages.
Yeah.
All ages, yeah. It's not very suitable now for seriously disabled people because it's very rocky and rugged and all that, so it's completely different to Lourdes in that regard.
Mm.
There's a bit of climbing involved.
And
you know.
Do you look forward to it, to actually, as you said there, you know, you meet new people, and have you made friends before on pilgrimages? You know,
lifelong friends,
really?
Yes, yeah. I have, yeah. Because the couple, the group leader now is from Dublin, and I'm friends with that couple since 1993. Right. Yeah.
And is it hard for priests to make friends?
It is. It is, really. I would say yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember one time years ago, I was in a restaurant in Waterford with my sister, and somebody wrote to the bishop that I was in a restaurant in Waterford with a blonde. You know? And that was my sister. So, like, people are kind of suspicious no matter who you're with.
And
so in that regard, it is difficult.
Well, you
but
say
very,
there,
you,
like you went for a drink. Do you drink alcohol? Or would you?
Oh,
go?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Well, a lot of priests don't, but a lot of priests do as well. So, do people look funny at you if you're in a pub having a pint, watching a match or something like that? Would you ever get funny looks?
So. No, I don't think so.
Right.
No, definitely not.
Right.
I think they actually have great regard for somebody to see that he's human.
Yeah.
You know?
Normal, yeah.
Now,
so it was Martin, Jackie and Mary.
Yes.
Martin was married to Jackie and Mary is the sister.
Yes. And Mary lives in Kinsale and Martin and Jackie are somewhere around Raheny there.
Well, let's find out. Martin, good afternoon to you.
Dobar dan, Father Richard, Kakas Day, which is good afternoon, Father Richard, in Croatian. How are you?
I'm good, Martin. How are you?
Great to talk to you, Father Richard. It was all
too.
A bit of a rush in the airport. And
it was.
We really enjoyed the evening of Victor's.
Yes, yeah.
And we look forward to seeing you again.
Oh, that's great, Martin. I'm delighted now that we're back in touch.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Oh, Damien, thanks a million.
It's not me. It's the Power of Lifeline.
Yeah, it's Lifeline, yeah, and your listeners.
Absolutely,
yeah,
and the listeners. And Martin, did you have a good time in Medjugorje?
Oh, it was a great time, and there was a pilgrimage aspect, and then there's social as well. I have a friend in Medjugorje who supports Dinamo Zagreb, and over the years he's given me Dinamo Zagreb shorts, and I've given him Shamrock Rovers shorts.
Okay.
So we have a great time, you know.
So you're a Rovers fan?
Yes, indeed.
Living on the north side?
On the north side. That's it.
Where? So, are you in and around Raheny, Richard was saying?
Around Raheny in Grange Park.
All right. So you're not a Bose? Would that be Bose territory a bit?
No, my father was from Pierce House in Pierce Street. He brought us up as Rovers fans, but my other brother Tony converted to Bohemians, but I didn't.
So that was in the Glenmalure days, was it?
That's right. And then actually in Medjugorje. David Parks had a miraculous healing. He used to play for Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers, and he's a guide out there now.
Right.
And I always say to him, I forgive you for playing for Bohemians, and he just laughs.
That's a place of forgiveness. So am I right? You talked about the jerseys there. I just missed it. Is the Dinamo Zagreb jersey, are they the same colour as Rovers? Are they green and white hoops?
No, they're blue.
All right. I don't know who. I must be thinking of Olympiacos or some of those teams.
Yeah.
I was in Zagreb recently myself, an absolutely gorgeous city. It's a lovely part of the world.
I have to get there for a match.
I'll have to get there for a match. So you're going to Medjugorje. Your wife is Jackie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well,
she couldn't talk to she has said, Richard, are you there still?
I am.
Yeah,
here,
Jackie has a message for you.
Right.
Hi, Father Richard. It was great meeting you in Medjugorje last week.
And we all enjoyed that evening when we had the four of us, we were out and had a great chat together. I'm sorry that I can't get to speak to you on air, but please get in touch with us. You should have my number there. God bless.
There you go. That's one we made earlier. Lovely. She couldn't speak live to us. So.
Great.
So it's like an edition of This Is Your Life here, Richard.
It is. Yeah, lovely people, I must say. So I'm glad to be back in touch. So we'll exchange numbers, I suppose, through Liveline.
Yeah. No, we're gonna put you into it. Now, Martin, this is. Are you happy to meet Richard again? Or are you just being nice?
Oh, I am indeed. Yes. We had a great time. We did.
Yeah.
And just tell Richard, I'll get him a T-bone steak with loads of gravy. He'll understand that joke.
Lovely, Kabil. That's grand.
And, so there you go.
And Martin, are you going? How long are you going on pilgrimages to Medjugorje?
My wife went in 87 and we got married in 89 and we were going to go to Cyprus on our honeymoon, but then Jackie's mum wasn't well and the wedding was back a few months and then we just decided to go to Medjugorje.
Right.
So it wasn't planned, you know.
And Jackie brought her sister along as well for company.
In later years. The family were going in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And Jackie's mum used to go as well, you know.
And Martin, like, I was asking Richard there about, you know, how numbers have might. Like, are you a religious person or a spiritual person? Or what does it for you going to Medjugorje?
I would be a religious person, yeah. But yeah, you'd really have to go there to experience the peace. And the thing is that Marian pilgrimages do trips where you can go to Medjugorje for a few days and you can go to Dubrovnik for a few days, which is lovely, you know?
Yeah. Dubrovnik's and, I mean, beautiful,
I'd really encourage people, you know, non-Catholics to go because it's regarded as the biggest confessional in the world. And there's been people that have been away for 30 or 40 years and they go to confession. And they always have a box of tissues there because there'll be people crying, you know?
And do you feel replenished when you come back from Medjugorje?
Oh, yeah, I do. It's great. You know, the people are great. You'd really have to go yourself, Damien, and experience it. And, you know.
And would you go to Lourdes?
I was in Lourdes once. And they're completely different, as Father Richard said earlier, you know.
Yeah. How are they different now?
Medjugorje does a bit of climbing, and whereas Lourdes, they wouldn't. It's down to the baths, you know.
Yeah. Well, when you go on these pilgrimages, is it a good place to make new friends?
Oh, it is. It is. The people are friendly, and we met some great friends out there this time. There was Eugene, who works in the guards, and another chap, Christy, who was a taxi driver in Colester. You may be listening, you never know. And another chap, Pascal, and the crack was just great, you know.
That sounds like going to a match.
That's great.
Richard, are you into sport?
No.
All right.
No. I love the hurling. I watch hurling, all right, because it just intrigues me, the speed of it all.
All right. Where are you? Waterford, is it?
Waterford, Dungarvan.
All right. And, well, maybe, speaking of which, Martin, you might convert him. Bring him to Tala.
No, Dinamo Zagreb.
Let his work cut out.
We go to Zagreb, we will.
All right.
They wear the blue the same as Waterford, you know.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. All right, well, listen, I'm going to leave you in touch off air. And
lovely.
Thanks to the power of Liveline, as I said, for doing that job for you, Richard. And
thank you, Damien.
Enjoy your trips into the future. And thanks very much, Martin. And thanks to Jackie and Mary as well.
Thanks
all right.
Yeah. Lovely talk.
God bless, Father Richard.
Mind yourselves.
Bye. And you too, Martin. Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
All right, David Bradley's on the line. David, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Damien. How are you?
Good. I think, though, you're not so good when you're having to go to Beaumont Hospital.
No. We've had a bit of a life-changing experience in our family this year. A close family relative has a serious condition that has to be monitored regularly. So we're there at least once a month, sometimes twice a month. And what I'm talking about is not a one-off. It's a regular occurrence with smokers occupying the whole walkway area from the car park as far as the entrance. And some of these smokers, although it's hard to believe, are patients who are in their dressing gowns, in their wheelchairs, and smoking in that area that people have to walk by. Now, I think anybody who is listening who attends Beaumont will know that this is a daily occurrence. And on my most recent visit, there were two ladies in their dressing gowns smoking in that area as we arrived. It was around 11 o'clock. We had to go through the temperature checks and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But these people are coming in and out of the main building without any supervision, without any checks, and they are treating the Beaumont Hospital like it's some sort of hotel or holiday camp. And it's just not on, given the...
Yeah. I'm sure, obviously, if you're a patient in a hospital, you know, you're not treating it like a holiday camp if you're undergoing surgery. But I know what you... Like, maybe for some people, smoking is kind of... It's a form of relaxation. But you're saying it's uncomfortable for you and other visitors having to walk through the waft of smoke, is it?
Well, it is, Damien. But, I mean, the point about, the smoking being... relaxing for some people.
Oh, we know it's terribly bad for you, of course. Yeah.
But I mean, the point about it is that when you're in a hospital, yeah. one would think that you're not allowed to go in and out of the building as and when you please. I mean, I mentioned I went in at 11 o'clock. When I came out at 1 o'clock, these same two ladies were in the same spot smoking. I don't know if they'd been there for the full 2 hours. Maybe they'd been in and out. I don't know. But I said to one of them, do you see the no smoking signs? They're everywhere. No smoking. This is a smoke-free campus. And I don't think you would want me to say the language that she used at me. She verbally lacerated me, Damien, you know? Mm-hmm. And I did not deserve that. We are under enough... pressure with the reasons we're having to attend the hospital without having to endure that kind of insult and contempt, you know.
Yeah. And so you're saying that they're smoking outside, but it's still a no smoking zone, is it, outside?
The whole area outside is marked very, very clearly all along the way. This is a no smoking area. Okay. It couldn't be clearer. It's every few yards. There's not just one sign. It's everywhere. It couldn't be clearer for anybody to see. And it's not only the patients who are abusing the situation. It's I don't know if they're visitors or
other people.
Taxis, whoever they are, they are they're smoking in that area, and it should not happen.
So. The only place that you're allowed smoke in and around Beaumont is outside the front gates. Is that right? As far as you know,
according to the signs, that would be correct.
And did you bring it to the attention of people in Beaumont? What was happening?
I have brought it to the attention in Beaumont, and I was just they were just not interested, and I would make it very clear that I'm not blaming the nurses or the doctors. If their patients get up and leave the ward, I'm not blaming the nurses or doctors, because they have enough to be doing. But at the same time, I am blaming the management of the hospital, because they have been made aware of what is going on and they have chosen to ignore it.
Like, you think there should be somebody there reprimanding anybody who lights up on the Beaumont campus?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And you know, not just kind of just informing them of the position, but, you know...
But is your complaint, David, that, you know, it's impacting on your health and the health of other people that are going visiting the hospital that don't smoke?
That would be part of it, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I would also make the point that in these COVID times, it seems absolutely ridiculous that people can come in and out of the hospital unchecked as patients And yet the people who are going there for an appointment, as we are, we have to go through the temperature checks and mm-hmm. all this sort of thing. These people seem to be exempt from all that kind of checking. And the people who are in the wards, you know, like everywhere, they are, you know, at risk from, you know, contracting or spreading the virus. And to be coming in and out of the hotel as though it's, you know, a resort, it's not on. And people are there. As I pointed out to this lady who abused me so dreadfully, I pointed out to her, this is a hospital. And, you know, if you're a patient here, you should be in your ward. And she said to me, I'm a patient here and I can do what I like. And another lady on a previous occasion, I mentioned to her that, you know, she was smoking in an area that, you know, she shouldn't be smoking. And again, she was in, you know, patient attire.
Yeah.
And she said to me, I have cancer and I'm going to enjoy my cigarettes for as long as I can. So you go and you can imagine. What she said.
God, doesn't that prove one thing, how addictive cigarettes are? That you're on, you know, you're being treated in a hospital for cancer or another illness and you still feel the urge to destroy the lungs with puffing away, yeah?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a perfectly valid point, and yet it's one that is ignored by the health authorities who, over the past 18 months, seem to be able to concentrate on very little except COVID. Yes. But, I mean, if it's about health, it's about health, and that should include all areas of health. And
no, it's the sheer
impact.
Juxtaposition of it all, the idea that you're in a place that's meant to make you well or trying to make you well, and you're blatantly doing something that is obviously doing yourself and maybe other people around you with secondhand smoke doing harm as well. By the way, Bowman Hospital, we did contact them. They say Bowman Hospital is a no-smoking campus. Accordingly, there is an active policy to prevent smoking on the hospital campus, particularly at the main front entrance and the back entrance. End of statement.
I find that very, you know, almost laughable, Damien, because, as I said earlier, anybody who visits Beaumont will know that statement isn't worth the paper mm-hmm. that it's written on, because it is not being implemented. They
as
can
far
say
as you
whatever
can see.
They like, but they're not implementing any kind of structure to deal with this problem.
Do you have any? I understand absolutely how annoying and frustrating, particularly when you're going in with a sick relative and you're having to go through, as I said, a cloud of somebody else's secondhand smoke. But do you have any sympathy for people that are in that scenario, that are so addicted to cigarettes that it's made them sick to go to hospital and that they still can't kick the habit?
I have friends who smoke, and those friends who do smoke, they're always very considerate and never, you know, never smoke in a way that is going to impact my comfort. And I respect that, you know, that's their decision to smoke. And I don't have anything against people smoking if they do it in the right way. But, I mean, I have sympathy with people with all areas of addiction, but it must not be allowed to create problems for somebody else.
Absolutely.
And the point about it is there are ways this could be dealt with. I mean, if you go on a train and you light up a cigarette, you can be fined. That is something that is in place to deal with something like this. But the hospital are not doing anything like that. They're not implementing any deterrence.
Yeah, what they're entitled to do, is it their own rules or is it kind of a law that if you want a particular part of your building, a public building, to be in no smoking area, are you actually could you be fined? I don't know. I'm not sure what the. Did you show them any evidence, by the way, of this? Do you know what I mean, or did you just say there's people smoking outside?
Okay. Going back to January, I did actually take a photograph of people smoking in that area, and I spoke to a management person who said to me that I was breaking the law in taking a photograph on the premises. My answer to that was, if somebody is breaking a law, I am I consider that I'm entitled to take a photograph. Now, what she said to me was, if you share that photograph, you're going to be in trouble.
That's
and I said categorically, I am not sharing that photograph. I took that photograph so that I can show you what is going on at your hospital.
Okay, well, listen, I share your frustration on that, and the fact then that you approach somebody and tell them to stop, and then you get abused like that. That's not good, particularly in front of other relations and stuff like that. And we know, as you said, that the people in Beaumont, they mean well. The doctors, nurses, they're working so hard and have
Absolutely,
worked so
yeah.
hard over
yeah,
the last
yeah.
couple of years, in particular, to deal with the pandemic that we're in. That it's hard always to manage other people's bad manners as well all the time. So
it is, Damien. But
yeah.
at the same time, they brought in this law that you can't smoke in a restaurant. And that law has worked very, very well.
Yeah.
The Minister for Health, or whoever has the remit to do this, should bring in a law to protect people going in and out of the hospital
yeah.
from the secondhand smoke of others. Good. There's no reason in the world why such a law can't be implemented with appropriate penalties.
Okay.
Because if it can be implemented for a restaurant or a train or a bus, it can be, or a supermarket, it can be implemented yeah. anywhere else.
David,
and particularly it should be in a hospital, which is supposed to be about
health
preserving
and wellness.
Health.
Yeah, exactly. All right, David, listen, thank you very much for contacting us and raising that point there, and I'm sure we'll come back to it. And if there's anybody out there that has been in that scenario, that you're so addicted to cigarettes that even in a hospital situation where your health is threatening to take your life, that you still feel that you need that cigarette. 51551. Now back to housing. Cathy Shields is on the line. Hello, Cathy.
Hello there. How's it going?
Very good. Now, tell me about your situation.
So I'm a single woman in my mid-30s and I'm working for the civil service here in Dublin.
Okay.
And my wages are quite low, which means that I'm eligible for HAP. And so I'm on the housing list, but because I'm a young, healthy woman with no dependents, I'll not be going anywhere on that list,
Mm.
And I grew up in social housing in Donegal, and I have, a very positive experience of that, the estate I grew up on is lovely and everybody's really friendly. And I think that's because, my mother, people are living there their whole lives, and I would love nothing more than to rent somewhere with a secure tenure.
What's your situation at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm about to start a new job, with a higher salary, which will mean that I'm taken off the housing list, and maybe in a couple of years I would be in a position to buy a house if it wasn't for the fact that these private companies are buying up everything that's going. My peers are being not necessarily outbid, but cash buyers are getting the houses that they've been bidding on.
How are you living at the moment, Cathy?
I'm renting.
Okay.
I'm a private renter. I'm renting. I'm a HAP tenant.
All right.
For now, but I'll just be a private renter, when my income increases the next month or so.
Was it difficult to find a place being on HAP?
Personally, no. I was fortunate in that the landlord was happy to accept HAP tenants. But, I've obviously heard scare stories from other people in the same situation.
Okay, so when you're starting this new job, you're going to get a higher salary. Does that mean then that you trigger the end of HAP for you?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And I mean, that's, HAP is there to support people who need that assistance. And it means that my extra money is going to go on rent and my quality of life will remain much the same as what it is, which is, disappointing, but also seems to be a fact of life for people my age in Ireland, in urban centres.
And again, do you feel somewhat discriminated against because you are single, that if you had a life partner that could share, the rent outgoings with you, that it would be easier for you?
I mean, I don't feel discriminated against, but undoubtedly, things would be easier in a couple money wise, you know. And I'm not like single by accident or anything. I quite enjoy my life, I'm not ready to settle down or anything like that.
It's your own choice, but it shouldn't mean that you're locked out of the rental market.
We see this for single people generally, you know, tax incentives to get married, things like that, you know, like we're rewarded for coupling up and,
What you're looking for, Cathy, you said you grew up in a council house and you were perfectly happy and have happy memories of that. So you would like the opportunity to rent with the prospect of eventually buying off the council. Is that what you're saying? That there should be more.
I wouldn't even necessarily need to buy. It's just the security that I would like. Yeah. You know, when you're renting from the council, they're not going to sell and then you'll have to move, or they're not going to move a member of the family.
But from your experience, there aren't enough council houses out there for people to rent. Is that what you're saying?
Like, certainly not for single people, you know, who are earning above a certain means. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, in cities like Vienna, you know, public housing is the norm. You can leave leases in your will to your family. You know, it's just a part of their society in a way that it was in Ireland, maybe in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
It was very normal for, a couple who would get married, move into a social house, and then maybe move on and maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But that stock of housing was there, and now it's not. And, you know, the government don't seem to have any desire at all to provide this kind of stability or security.
Yeah, and you know the way, weren't bed sits, you know, shared bed sits, those box room kind of scenarios, weren't they banned a few years ago by the government? There were some horrible places, as we would have seen evidence and heard in this programme, about the hovels that some people were in, sharing bathrooms and all of that. So that's all banned now, I believe. But I wonder, is there... is there an opportunity maybe to relook at that again?
Well, I mean, they have.
How would you feel about that?
Like, the government have relooked at it in the most horrible way, in that, you know, they've given permission for these co-living units to be built.
Yeah,
and we're also seeing, if you have a look at Daft or a site like that, people are renting beds in a room, you know? So from my position right now, I mean, I'm all right, but like the idea of a bed sit, a place of your own that you could close the door in, you know, doesn't sound that bad. You wouldn't have to share your kitchen, although your kitchen might be beside your bed. But none of these are ideal, you know. What we need is just a program of public building. And especially now when we're looking at what's going on in Donegal with this Mica scandal, upwards of 5,000
dreadful,
families and homes are affected.
And kudos to Barry Lenehan on the Claire Byrne show, who's done amazing reporting on what's happening with Mica. And again, I think this morning on that, it's a horrendous situation for the people of Donegal that are dealing with that. I'm just wondering, the Housing for All plan, Cathy, have you looked at that? Is there anything in that for you?
Because I'm starting a new job, I'll be locked out of that for 12 months until my probationary period is over. And even then, my salary, which is better than, will be better than it is now, it's still not, I probably wouldn't get a mortgage big enough to buy a property in Dublin. And that's where I work, that's where I'm based. I know I'm very privileged to be living in the city centre and not have those huge commutes, but I really don't want to sacrifice 3 hours a day be commuting. If that's possible, but it's looking impossible.
Okay. All right, Cathy, listen, good to talk to you. Thanks for making the call, and the very best of luck to you with your new job.
Thanks very much.
All right. Back after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Sarah's on the line. Sarah, good afternoon to you. What do you make of people smoking outside hospital entrances?
Saying that it's right for them to do it, but my question would be, where are they supposed to go and do it? I mean, if somebody is willing to come out of their ward and have a cigarette, they're going to smoke. So if you don't want it at the entrances, maybe make a space for them to go to. Like, this is not new. It's been going on for years around in Beaumont. People are obviously, smoking is an addiction. You know, it's not a case of saying, well, I'm going into hospital for a fortnight, so I'll give up the smokes for this fortnight. It doesn't work that way. Mm. Also, I have seen, because I live at the back of the hospital, I've seen a staff member smoking at the back of the hospital and not outside the gates. And I've seen staff members bringing the people from the wards down for their smoke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So do you smoke yourself, Sarah?
No, I don't. But my father did. He gave up 4 years ago. He had a health scare.
Yeah.
And my grandparents did all their lives till the day they died. You know what I mean? So it's not a simple case of, I'm going to give it up now and I'm going into hospital. It's an addiction like alcohol, like drugs. That's what needs to be understood.
Mm-hmm. But
and in times of stress, you know, as the gentleman was saying, those two ladies that he approached, well, he doesn't know what news they were just told or what they just heard or if they were feeling bad or feeling down. So they were having a smoke in the wrong place. If there was somewhere else for them to go, they probably would have went there. But it's every day, 24/7, there are people smoking outside the front and back of the hospital. Mm. Every day. And it's...
Yeah, and a lot of building, public, like, you know, go to the airport as well and you see loads of people gathered outside before they go in as well. And you
exactly,
see it in hospitals.
Your last cigarette before you go in.
Yeah. And did your dad find it hard to give up the fags?
He did, because he smoked since he was, want to say, 13, and he finally gave them up when he was 68.
God.
So it wasn't exactly easy, but he did it for his health because he didn't feel, you know, he didn't want, he got a scare and that was enough for him. But some people just aren't, can't. They're just not that strong-willed. They just can't do it. It's not that easy.
Yeah, but like, was the bad health brought on by the cigarettes?
Not as such, because it ended up not being anything in the end, but I think the fear of it was enough for him, that he didn't want to.
He was frightened into it in a way, scared into it.
Exactly, yeah. He was scared into it, but that's what I mean. I mean, if these people are already in hospital and they're not scared enough to stop, well, that should tell you something.
That's true, yeah. Rosie's on the line there. Good afternoon, Rosie.
How are you?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just I was visiting my elderly mother-in-law recently in my local hospital, and there was a number of very heavily pregnant women smoking outside the front door, and I was quite horrified, really, to be honest, when I saw that.
Yeah.
Because, I saw it happening maybe 15, 20 years ago, and I thought, you know, that it had been addressed, but obviously still going ahead, you know, and I'm a non-smoker, and I know it's tough trying to give up cigarettes or a drug. And people are addicted to them. But, I mean, I was thinking of the unborn child, you know, inhaling these fumes.
Well, doesn't it just go to show how addictive cigarettes are
absolutely,
when you're pregnant and you can't give them up?
Yeah, I'm not condoning. I'm just saying there should be possibly more done to help people get off the cigarettes. Because, I mean, they are in a drug, an addictive drug. Mm. And it's so. Like,
I wonder what the figures are in terms of people smoking in this country. I would have thought there's a lot less people smoking now than, you know.
You'd hope so. You'd
20,
hope
30
so,
years ago.
I would think a lot less younger people maybe are taking it up, but you would still have middle to older age still smoking.
Yeah, yeah. People that started 30 years ago or whenever in their teenage years, from that up.
Yeah.
Johnny's on the line as well. Hello, Johnny. Go ahead. Your point.
Hi, how are you doing? Johnny here.
Yes, Johnny.
It's exactly the same situation in Tala University Hospital. You have to walk through the sort of guard of honour of smokers to get into the hospital.
The guard of honour.
Again, it's clearly marked no smoking signs everywhere.
Yeah.
There are security staff all over the place, and really they do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to say is, it actually seems to be mostly the visitors for people who are smoking outside.
Sure. And they're having a quick puff before they go in, or the minute they get out they want to, are you a smoker yourself, Johnny?
I am, but I spent about a year in Tala Hospital and I stopped smoking because I was confined to a bed.
Right.
And they put me on nicotine patches, which I didn't have to pay for. the HSE kindly covered that.
Okay, so they do try, and in your case, they try to encourage you off them anyway. Okay, look, I'm going to have to leave it there. We're coming up to 3 o'clock, but thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Rosie.
No worries.
Thanks to Sarah. Thanks to all our callers on the programme today. The producer was series producer Rebecca Meehan. Sound was conducted by Liam Mullen, and the broadcast coordinator, Daniel Keating. Ray Darcy's up next. Good afternoon.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.